Hello everyone and welcome to today's call called Make 2010 an Award Winner. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure having you on the line today. Now, in a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, David Pearl. But before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work today, particularly if this is your first peopleyoushouldmeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking David a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through our site by you, our listeners. Now, because we're actually exploring the whole theme of how to make the following year an award winner, I just wanted to share a few things that made my 2009 an outstanding year. And one of the key things was actually meeting David Pearl. Now, David was introduced to me through a very close mutual friend, JC Mack, who has also appeared on the People You Should Meet program. And we immediately got on like a house on fire. And I guess, creatively speaking, two of the things that were really high points for me last year was actually going along to a program called Realize, which is David Pearl's phenomenal personal development and personal growth in creative environment that runs over 4 days. I had the good fortune of experiencing that in the summer in the UK last year. And another creative high point was actually seeing David in an improvised opera show, my first ever, called Impropera. I think it's the only show of its kind in the world, and it was certainly one of the most thoroughly engaging and entertaining stage experiences that I've ever seen. So it's a great pleasure to welcome my creative friend for some pearls of wisdom this evening, David Pearl. How are you doing there, David?
I'm doing very well. I'm very, very happy to hear you. Britain misses you, but it's great to be talking to you, and thank you for that very generous introduction.
Cool, David. I guess the whole theme of the call is making the year ahead an award-winning one, and I was just wondering if you could describe what an award-winning year actually looks like.
Wow, that's a very good. It's a very good question, especially in a time when the normal measures of success have probably been knocked a little bit sideways. I feel, to be honest, the question I think is, what does an award-winning year feel like, and rather than look like, because it's different for different people. And I think we'll come to it really. I mean, if you're using the analogy, the movie analogy, I think it's got to do with what did you learn. I know that sounds odd, but a year that teaches you an enormous amount, I think, is the arts tell us and history tells us, and certainly if we look at cinema. Metaphor that also tells us that it's a year in which you didn't just get what you wanted, because that sometimes doesn't happen, but where you learned, where you moved, and I'm using obviously this phrase award winner in a kind of comedy, a slightly ironic way, with the best Oscar, the best films don't always get the Oscars, but it was really just trying to think about and I talk to individuals and businesses about this, how would you create the year you're living, rather than respond and react to it. How would you create it? And I think there are some things we can chat about, later about actually how you do that.
Absolutely. Now, creativity is one of the big themes of this call, David. And I was just wondering, you're a very accomplished creator in many different fields of creativity, and I was just wondering if you could actually give people a feel for some of the creative highlights of your life to date.
Thanks. I was called up. I was in Italy the other day, and I got called up late at night by an English person that didn't know there was an hour's difference, in our head. And he just bought a recording of Tosca, which is a Puccini opera, for those of you who don't know, and found my name under Placido Domingo's. And that was one of the high points, which was, when I was a kiddie, I 10 years old, the same age as my daughter is now, I was spotted at school as having a voice of sorts, and taken to the opera house here in London, Covent Garden. And I spent 4 years there singing all the little boy roles. So when I wasn't singing, I was watching. I was standing at the side of the stage. So it was a real quite magical awakening into the world and the world of the arts. And I must remember I sat there looking at the stage, thinking not this is artificial, but something in me said that this is how life can be. This is the richness, the bigness of the emotions and so on. So that was amazing. Another milestone, when you ask me in that way, it's quite nice. It's a flashes past like a movie. I was very, very lucky, and ridiculously lucky, actually, to be asked to work for Stanley Kubrick, who I'm sure you know is an amazing, not just an amazing filmmaker, but an amazing mind. And I had a kind of humble role. I was turning books into scenarios for him, but it enabled me the privilege of hanging around with him and seeing how his mind worked a little bit, which was a real incredible privilege, and that's certainly helped inform some of the ways I think about film and how we then use that with individuals and businesses.
Mm.
And I don't know. I think I was lucky, incredible luck. I fell into presenting a program on the BBC about music, which was amazing. And then I think another final one. I know you didn't ask for the whole of my life story, but it's a very good question. What are the things that really shine out? There was an amazing moment for me, again, synchronicity, intent. I'm kind of marvel at it. I marvel at what's happening at times, as well as getting very frustrated at others. Keep it in perspective. But there are times when you recognize, you are the vehicle through which things are happening rather than the doer. And I remember I was running an opera company, Opera Circus, and loving it and making no money, making minus money, and things were getting a little bit financially difficult, and I was beginning to feel uncomfortable, and I did a meditation, and the skeptical part of my mind said, that doesn't mean anything. But I'd seen an arena in a hot place, and I'd covered with sand, and within, 10 weeks, I was in that arena. We'd built it. It was on top of a cliff in Portugal. It was for an amazing company who had seen me on television and asked me to make a creative program for their top 1,000 people. And we built this arena, and there we were. And it under the stars, getting them to do an opera. And it kind of kick-started this career, if you want to call it that, that I've had for the last 15 years, working with some of the world's biggest organizations and getting creativity sort of into their bloodstream, if you like.
Mm. Amazing.
Lucky boy.
Yeah. Huh? Absolutely. And David, I just wanted to pick up on one thing you said there, just marveling at life. I thought that was a beautiful turn of phrase. Mm. And I was just wondering if you could just describe in a little bit more detail this whole process of actually becoming a vehicle through which things happen rather than actually being in that, I guess, that mechanistic controlling frame of mind. What does it actually mean to be a vehicle through which things happen?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, you mentioned, I can tell you what the experience is like for me. Having done a fair amount of different practices in meditation, in a funny way, the show that you mentioned, Impropra, the improvised opera show, is a repeated experience I have of this feeling of being a vehicle rather than being the mover of it. And you're standing on stage. The thing you most fear is that you'll run out of ideas and you'll look stupid. And that is exactly what needs to happen. And the moment it happens, when you really run out of ideas and you're standing there vulnerable, really vulnerable, for most people this is their nightmare. A, being on stage anyway. Two, being on stage and not knowing what to do. Next, being asked to sing, this is like a triple nightmare. But funnily enough, that is the moment that you hope will happen in the show. And then outpours, not just out of you, but out of our fellow performers, you really feel borne along. You feel sung rather than singing. And so I don't know if that's an answer for what does it mean. I think we've all had our experiences of that. And I know you've had, for example, you've had some near-death experiences, which will probably give you that feeling. But it's something we can talk about in relation to this idea of thinking of your year as a movie. Because I think what you have to do, it's partly being two places at once. I think you partly have to be in your skin as the actor. And I think you partly have to be looking at yourself as the director.
Mm.
And it's a kind of, it's a double mind, if you like.
Mm.
And, there's, it's a beautiful feeling, and I think it is our natural state. I think, you know, I think I've had to go through some very artificial ways of finding, you know, theatre, people would say, is artifice, but actually I've found by going to that quite artificial place, I personally feel that I've come across myself more often and more profoundly than if I'd stayed in what they call the real world.
Mm. Well, I think that's a really good way of describing it, actually, like being in the movie and also being on the sidelines of the movie. And I think the two roles of the director and the actor, they're very, like as a metaphor, they're very powerful in terms of being able to see and experience life where you're engaged and also have perspective as well.
I think that is, and perspective is important because here's the other thing, you know, what you decide will happen very likely will not. You know, anyone that's done any improv at all or anyone that's done any living on a normal day or has kids or a small pet knows that you can set all the goals you like and you can decide what's going to happen, and there's a very good chance that that won't happen. And we could talk more about that, but the sense of intent, I know you and some of your other speakers think a lot about intent, I certainly do, and you know, if you can sit in the intent, in some ways you can be, you're supported by that, and finally you're peculiar, you're quite strong in that, and then you can allow the unexpected to move through and past you, and it's a wonderful feeling. I don't think it's a mysterious feeling. I just think it is probably more our natural state than this living in this illusion that we know what's going to happen next and we can make it happen and you know, protect ourselves against the unexpected. I think it's probably quite a modern invention.
Yeah, one of my favourite quotes is, the way to make God laugh is actually to tell him your plans, or him or her. But I think like goal setting, in a sense, for a lot of people, I know particularly creative people, can struggle with the traditional controlling goal setting stance on how to actually manifest and bring about our dreams. And I know you've managed to devise a very creative and innovative process that can help people explore life probably more through the filters of a movie-esque kind of existence. And I was just wondering if you could actually walk people through some of the key aspects of living your life as if it was a movie, and how you can actually use that as a tool to bring about your dreams.
I'd love to give you a sneak preview, if you like. I think, you know, going into that, I think it's worth saying that I'm not suggesting people live a fantasy, and people do. I mean, actually, sometimes the reason people go to the cinema, they think, is to escape and is to live in a fantasy life. That's not really what I'm talking about. Well, it's certainly not what I'm talking about. It's really more a simple way of treating your life like an artwork, if you see what I mean. You know, it's like, can you step back now from your life and think, okay, I am going to treat that as a precious object, as an artwork. And I found that, you know, because I've tried it myself, because we're very familiar with film, it's something that people can do incredibly easily. And, you know, the first step in it, I think, is a simple one, but it's kind of also profound, which is to see yourself at the center of the story. First thing is to see yourself at the center of the story, which is where the protagonist lives. And it sounds simple, but it's amazing the number of times I ask people that, and you can see them resist the idea that they are the center of their story for very good reasons. We've been trained to be good citizens, good parents, good lovers, good husbands, good wives, etc. And there's something I'm talking now about, I suppose, you know, Northern Europe, where, you know, the world that I know. So I wouldn't say this is global, but I have talked about this in Africa and other places, and it does seem to be fairly common that the people feel reluctant to either say, I'm a hero, because it seems immodest, or B, put yourself at the center of the story, because it seems then to exclude other people. However, for the purposes of this exercise or this way of thinking, you do really have to, it's your God-given right and responsibility to be at the center of your own story. And you know, I think there's something that it doesn't get talked about much at school, but should be. Yeah, it should be. If you were running your life as the protagonist in the story and writing it as you know, writing it like the author, then I think we'd approach it in a slightly different way. So first see yourself as the protagonist. And there's a word, the protagonist, you know, is a Greek word which means, you know, the person that gets the action going. I like to say, in order to be the protagonist of your story, you just have to be the person to whom the most happens. Which, of course, it helps people go, okay, well, that's clearly me. And then there's this second quick piece of vocabulary which confuses us, which is hero or heroine. Because people have associated it with being courageous, being extraordinary. And I think the study that I've done of heroes and, you know, going back through literature and so on is, you know, heroes, there's only one universal quality that I think the hero of a story has. And it's not courage, heroism, high morals or anything, not at all. But it's a sense of there's more. That's really all that all heroes have, whether it's Little Red Riding Hood going, why won't they tell me what's in the woods? Or whether it's, you know, Russell Crowe as a gladiator or whatever. There's a sense that, if you like, they don't fit. And this is interesting. When you ask people, are you what you show or are you pretending? Most people put their hands and say, look, I actually, this is not all I am. I am not what I say on my business card, really. It's just a version. And actually, I'm sort of pretending a bit. It's such a common feeling. And I love to say to people, great, that's all you need to be a hero. Congratulations, you know. Or if I ask people, the other thing is, you know, people don't want that title, especially when it's tainted or it's been associated with great heroism. It, you know, great high courage. People, you know, it's like in the Matrix. You know, the hero does not want to be the hero. You know, you are not the one, Neo. And that I like to say to people also. If you're feeling inside that you're not the hero, congratulations. That means you are, because the hero in the sense that I'm talking about, in the sense that we can live it, Damien, you, me, your listeners, that is. I think it's not about being an extraordinary person. In a crude sense, it's about being an ordinary person, if there is such a thing, who does extraordinary things. I think, you know, go to where you feel ordinary and work from there. So that's a little bit about the protagonist, that, you know, seeing life as a story in which you are the protagonist. And then
I was going to say it's very interesting. I read a survey where they mentioned that the biggest fear of most Fortune 500 CEOs is actually being found out. So it's almost like it doesn't matter where you are on the spectrum of life, we've all got this prevailing fear of being found out for pretending at whatever it is that we're doing in life.
Totally. I mean, I don't know if any of you know the Big Mind, Big Heart process. If you don't, definitely check it out. Genpo Roshi's process. But in that, you know, you get to speak to different parts of yourself, and there's usually, I mean, almost always, there's the fraud, the voice of the fraud, you know, the bit that goes, I don't want to. But, you know, what I like to say about that, or the way I like to think about that, you know, is definitely embrace that as a character. Definitely embrace that as a character. And also, remember this, that, you know, you have a huge repertoire of yous, yeah, within you. And part of the fun of thinking about your life as a movie is you get to let some other versions of yourself play. People got very trapped, yeah, with this notion of the unified self and the you know, identified with the ego and all this kind of good stuff. And you know, psychology's kind of added a little bit to that. I'm not saying it's wrong. I just find what's very helpful for me and for people is to loosen up a bit and think, okay, who do I need to dial up today? Who can I download? I did a very interesting exercise with Richard Bandler, those of you who know Richard, where he got you to, his contention was that every movie star you've ever seen is encoded in your mental kind of archive.
Wow.
You haven't just watched them, but you've ingested them. And using hypnosis, they can be brought out. And, well, blow me, I was, for 20 minutes, Al Pacino. I mean, it was, you know, so again, you know, again, it's a two-way street. You know, people go to the movies, they think they're going to the movies to see someone else's story, but actually, as we know, we're watching ourself up on the, up there on the screen. We're watching. That's actually the function of story. It's to take the parts of yourself, the light, the dark, the red, the green, the good, the bad, if you want to call them that, and a story lets them play out while you watch or read in safety. And it's a way, I think that's what art, a lot of that is about. It's about letting non-integrated parts of yourself integrate while you watch in safety. Someone described it as being tickled by a dagger. So, you know, it's dangerous, but you're just tickling yourself. So it's a way of processing things that need to be processed without putting yourself in harm's way.
Well, that's not integrated parts. You can watch them safely from the comfort of your own cinema seat. It's beautiful.
Well, I think it's true. I think, well, you know, I spent some time after university going around the country dressed up as Darth Vader. Not because I'm a Trekkie, you know, not because I was a Star Wars fan, but because I needed some money and they needed someone who would fit the suit. And it was amazing. You know, who became a hero out of Star Wars? Was it Luke Skywalker? Well, yes and. But the one that kids remember even today is Darth Vader. Now, Darth Vader, you know, is he a baddie? Well, he is, and we can talk about this a bit more as well. In terms of your cast of characters, he's the shadow, and we love the shadow. We love the shadow gets all the best lines, you know, and that's another function. You know, if you're thinking about your life, there's just a word about that. If you think about, let's imagine you're thinking about your life, your professional life. Well, let's imagine you're running a business and you're goal setting. What do you do with problems? You seek to solve them, marginalize them, skirt them. What does a filmmaker do with problems? Embrace, build up, and put them right at the center. Why is that? Because that's where the money is, yeah? Colliding with the shadow, colliding with the thing you're most fearing, and learning through that is the reason for having the movie in the first place.
Mm.
And yet, how often do we do that? How often do we plan the dark stuff in, that if we're going to call it dark stuff? How do you, you know, planning the low points in? How often do you set off on a beginning of the year? How many of the listeners out there are thinking, okay, no, I've got my, you know, affirmations up on the fridge, and this year it's going to work. And inside yourself, there's a voice going, no, it won't, or it might. But all along the way, you're going to have, there's going to be dark moments. And if we sat, just as most people have an inkling of how they're going to die, they also, or how they'd like to die, and, you know, that's interesting as well. A lot of people have a very clear idea of what the low points will be looking like.
Mm-hmm.
And what we tend to do in professional and you know, our sort of formal life is just hope it won't happen or deny it. But actually what's great, if you're writing the movie of the year, build it in. And I say, you know, have a low point party, you know, just schedule it in. Make sure that, you know, September 7th, whenever it is you think it's going to happen, you know, write it in, put it in, invite people around for a low point party. It sounds comic, but if you think about it, it's a kind of Zen, it's a Zen practice. And it's going to happen, so you might as well embrace it.
Mm.
It's what we call the moment of maximum learning.
Mm.
Moment of maximum learning. You know, I love that phrase, sometimes we win and sometimes we learn. And I think if you think about the films that you love, the moments that really stay in your memory very often are not the triumphs. The triumphs are like, yeah, nice. But it's the bit before the triumph. It's the low point from which the hero or heroine protagonist has sort of rebounded. That makes that hooks us. That's what hooks us.
Mm. And that actually draws nicely into what we discussed at the front of the call, like what actually creates an award-winning year, actually reflecting on what you learnt. And, it is very, very, very powerful. And then I guess I really like as well is, I guess most of the personal development world, we do gloss up or try and get these projected realities and focus only on the things that we really want to the expense of all the other different textures of life. And I just think actually acknowledging the spectrum of life and seeing it all as beautiful, the dark moments, the light moments, the moments where nothing's happening at all, I think it's all there to be celebrated.
I couldn't agree more, and it is something that I think is urgent now. I think it's urgent because, you know, I hang out quite a lot with you know, I've got lots of friends and peers who are, you know, kind of not, if not on, enlightened, you know, they're on a kind of hanging out in the light a bit, let's put it that way.
Mm.
And they're so easy to slip into this thing of, you know, if only people could see, or if only people weren't, so if only we could eradicate the evil, if only we could be polluting less, which of course is true. But by wishing it away or denying it or not embracing it, we create, you know, we're adding to the problem. And without wanting to get into the philosophy, I think what is really healthy about the arts is that they thrive upon, they embrace the darker, kind of stupider, you know, more obscene, playful, childish sides of our existence, which we kind of pretend aren't there when we're, quotes, grown up. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Great. Now, I guess in composing this movie, one of the key things we sort of touched on a little bit there as well, is just having like a cast of supporting actors where you can really have some fun and some great exchanges. And I was just wondering, I hear lots of people say that they'd love to have more interesting people in their lives or more people that are on their own wavelength so they can really have some fun interaction with life. And I was just wondering if you could actually describe how to go about that process of drawing like the best possible cast of supporting actors into your script of life.
I'd be delighted. I mean, I think it is something you can do very practically. It's good fun and very interesting. You can draw up a cast list, and you have two types of people, I would suggest. There are what I would call allies, and not friends, and I'll explain that in a second, and testers, what I call testers. Now, on the ally side, these are people who are, loosely speaking, supporting you. Now, how they do that is many and various. You know, in a movie, you can have a buddy movie. You can have there can be a love interest. There can be a kind of craggy guy. There's all sorts of very archetypal people that turn up. But I think, a word or perhaps a little short story will make the point of the difference between ally and friend. There is a wonderful explorer and author and speaker called Robert Swan, those who know him. And he, if I've got the facts right, tried to walk to the South Pole and failed. He tried doing it solo. So next time he decided he would go with some people. So he put an ad in the paper, advertised for, he wanted the best cook, best medic, best dog handler, and so on. And he got them, and off they went. And about 10 days into the walk, he was going out of his mind because these were not the people he got on with. And he was stomping around outside. He said, "Why didn't I bring my friends?" And he says, then I stopped and I looked where I was and I realized to myself, I could have brought my friends, but if I brought my friends, I would have died. Which I think makes the point beautifully, which is that your allies, by all means, have your friends around. But your friends are people that generally have an interest in you staying as you are. Allies are people who will, of course, challenge you. They will. You may not get on with them. They may irritate you just a bit. But given the intent for the year, can you see if you can choose people, go out of your way to choose people who don't necessarily appeal or may challenge or you feel a little bit uncomfortable with? And here's the thing you can do, which is ask them to be in your movie. Often I work in organizations and I get people to do a casting process at the beginning of the year, and it's amazing to watch somebody who, quotes, has a problem with somebody else in their department and go up to them and say, "Jim, I'm casting my movie this year and I wonder, could I cast you as my kind of sparring partner? Or could you be, please, a really difficult obstacle to get around so I can learn?" And it's amazing to watch what happens because people go, they're flattered, and then they go, "Yeah, sure, I'll do that for you." You know, in other words, we there's a certain mastery in embracing and then being appreciative of it, right? There it is with the allies. And the other thing you can also do is why limit yourself to the people you know? Barak can be in your movie. Why not give him a cameo role? Or Brad Pitt? Why not? In other words, they don't have to actually be there, but there are people that inspire you, move you on, challenge you. They can be people that you knew once and have died. They can be ancestors. You have an open check and you can create and change your cast as you go along. However, if you focus just on allies, And by the way, let's just talk about our love partners, those of us who have them. You know, they are usually, you know, love interest, ally, and a little bit, you know, tester all rolled into one. You know, that's the funny thing about the institution of the relationship is that very often they'll be teaching you a lot along the way. And we can talk about, in case I forget, in case in the flow of this I forget, blind spots are incredibly important. One of the things the ally does, and indeed the tester does, is help you see into your blind spot. Mm. And, you know, one thing, if we get nothing else from this call, the people who are sitting out there like me thinking, what is this year going to be like? And I want it to be a certain way, and I see wealth, and I see this. Well, it's worth considering that for 5,000 years, arts have been telling, the arts and storytelling and culture generally, but particularly the arts have been telling us that the protagonist has a blind spot. Mm. That's why you go on the journey. That you are, it is not possible to know thyself sitting still in North London. It just, or anywhere. What you have to do, it would appear, this is at least the lesson of story, lesson of legend, lesson of myth, lesson of the arts, is you go on a journey. And the things that happen to you, the people you meet, are there to help you peer into what is by definition otherwise unseeable to you, which is your blind spot. Some people bridle at that and they say, I don't have a blind spot, nor does my organization. But if you think about that, can that be true? You know, do you know all of yourself? Of course you can't. In fact, I think it's something that keeps us human, is we have this blind spot. Do you want to have your life run by the blind spots in your life? I think not. But it is worth thinking about your allies as people that can shine a light for you into your blind spot. Mm. Another class of character that does that fantastically is what I call the testers. Now, just, you know, again, philosophy 101, you know, you are your shadow, Luke is Darth Vader and so on. But I think it is worth thinking about that if there's a phrase, the nemesis, which is a phrase we sometimes use in, you know, film structure or story structure, which is not an enemy. Let me say that again. The nemesis is not your enemy. The nemesis, or the guy in the black hat or Darth Vader, whatever it is, in a good story, certainly, and in the oldest stories, does not necessarily wish you ill. What causes the dynamic between you is that you have a want and they have a want, and those wants are not aligned. And it's the wants that bring you into apparent conflict. So let's just think about this in terms of, you know, an individual sometimes it's easy to think about it as a business. Just imagine you're running a small business and you have a competitor. Yeah. Does the competitor wish you personally ill? I hope not. I think it's unlikely. But they want what you want. What they want, they want their share of the market. You want your share of the market. And that is what brings you into apparent conflict. Mm-hmm. Now, you can live in conflict with the nemesis, or you can do what I just said, which is celebrate the fact that you've got a worthy adversary. And this obviously happens in your personal life as well. Instead of trying to eradicate the person that is causing the difficulty in your life, and I'm not suggesting it's not a recipe for suffering, but instead of just trying to get away from it or neutralize it, think as an author, what is fantastic about this evil or difficult being? And why have you created them in your story? And if you have that authorial take on it, they stop being a threat, they stop being an irritation, they become an asset. They're part of the story. I'm not saying in a kind of weak way, oh, you know, every challenge is an opportunity. I'm just thinking, get up. If you find yourself fearful or in a kind of conflict relationship, a way to turn it into to your advantage or turn it into to transform it is to look at it as an author might and say, how wonderful. I, the light, have managed to create this, the dark, so that we can learn something together. Mm. And one, while I'm on a roll, and then I'll let you come in, but one thing I think it's really worth saying, and I love saying this, I love having, it's a question just to pose and just think about it yourself. You have to remember, you are the protagonist of your story, right? Mm. And of course the people around you are protagonists of their stories, right? Yeah. Mm. Okay. It is just possible, in fact, it's likely, in fact, I'm going to say it's certain, that while you are being the hero of your story, you are being the nemesis of other people's story. So before you get into kind of lovely hero complex and, you know, you strap on your wings and whatever and your leather skirt with your sword or whatever it is, we remember you're fulfilling different functions in different people's stories simultaneously.
That's brilliant. That's in terms of perspective, that's phenomenal. I guess we're often just viewing the world from our own filtered perspective, but actually to actually jump outside of your own story and see it through the eyes of, like, someone else in your life, whether they're friend or foe, like, it certainly does paint a very different picture or very different tinted view of what's unfolding in life.
Well, think about it. If you bring it right down to reality, how many of us have gone on a course, a self-development course? We've sat in a hot tub, we've rolled around the forest, whatever we've done, okay? And we know this is great. This is great for us. We've developed, we've evolved. The hero is moving on. You then go home or back to work, and you notice you're not exactly welcomed with open arms. And you sense it, but you think, oh, well, you know, it's, well, I don't know what it is. It'll go away. But, of course, you have to understand that the change that you brought back into people's lives, you brought back from your hero journey, is very threatening to them because they are the heroes of their story, and you have suddenly shown up as a challenge. Now, you can try and neutralize it, sit around the fire, you know, light a smudge and try and make it go away. Or you embrace it, go, yes, fantastic, fantastic. I'm living at least, you know, five roles at once. And I don't think that's complex, any more complex than human nature actually is. I think that's how it is.
Awesome. That's amazing. Now, another theme that I wanted to pick up on, David, as well, is this whole idea of context. Now, as an avid film watcher, like, I'm always curious around how a director creates context to reveal different aspects of the character. And I guess tying this into this whole process of going on a journey for the hero, I was just wondering, do you have any tips for people in terms of setting their year and actually creating the right environment or the right context for them to actually fulfill their dreams? How would they go about just creating that environment or context?
Great question. I'd recommend everybody going just get one really good film out of the one of their favorite films and look at the first 8 minutes, or at least as long as it takes for the protagonist to appear. In a good film, in terms of context setting, what you will see, remember, film is an emotional medium, basically, not an intellectual. Usually, I mean, there are French films and some Danish that probably don't fit that bill. But, you know, essentially, as a medium, it's melodrama. It's emotional. And what film will tell you is not just the objective, the stated objective of the character. You know, this year I'm going to. It will also indicate the underlying intent of the character, what I call the deep intent. So give you an example. Okay. Beginning of Harry Met Sally, although that's obvious as well. Any love story, it's immediately obvious. But Thelma and Louise. So Thelma and Louise, you see these characters at the beginning, and you see you see their lives, and you see, but you also see the intent. And the intent, I would say, is freedom. Okay, this is about freedom. Or look at the Gladiator again, to use an example that comes to mind. The very first time you see the Gladiator, he's stroking a. You don't actually see his face. You just see a hand stroking corn with a wedding ring on and the sound of children and Spanish guitars in the background. Now, that slips into your unconscious, but you realize that even though it seems to be a story about a soldier, it's actually a love story. It's about a man that loves his wife and kids and wants to go home. Now, in terms of clear context, you can do no better, I think, than dwell in your deepest intent. Not just for the year, but the intent that, like we said earlier in the conversation, that it's actually the intent that chose you as the vehicle, not the other way around. And actually, we might talk about this at the end, because there's this little mini course that I'm doing for a month with people, those who wish to join on, to join in, and to explore this very thing live over a month together. You know, using some digital help and using a kind of audio seminar thing. But I don't want to get sidetracked into that. We can come back to that at the end. But installing a deep intent is like kind of dressing the set, if you like. you know, install it, and we can talk about how we do that, and then, you know, forget about it. Don't. Some people worry about goal setting. They put the thing on the fridge and they look at it and they look at it and they look at it. That's helpful, but what I'm talking about is a deep intent that kind of wraps a context around the whole year that is profoundly generative. Yeah.
Mm.
The second thing I would do. Is this helpful? Is this making
absolutely.
Sense?
Absolutely. This is awesome. Yeah.
Okay. The second thing I would do, or if we're looking at it as a movie, and you know, I do encourage you to do that because it shortcuts some of the other nonsense we say to ourselves, is think about, well, what does a film need? A film needs scenes, right? And what are scenes? What are scenes? I'll answer that question in a second, but let me describe a film scene to you and see what happens in your mind as I describe it. Okay, so. You are in this film, okay? So, Damien, there you are, and you're looking good, and you do. You're in Prada head to toe, yeah? And you're in San Diego, wherever you are, okay? And there's kind of funky backbeat. In you go. You go into a bank, okay? And you're standing, and we see there's a whole queue of people in the bank in front of you leading up to the teller. There's only one teller there, so it's like a kind of sleepy bank. And you're standing there, and you're looking at your watch, and suddenly somebody bumps into you from behind and walks right to the front of the queue. How do you feel? Well, the audience is thinking, like, he's really, really damn annoyed. Who is this person?
Mm.
So Damien flexes his Brad Pitt-like ripped body, goes down, the taps his on the shoulder, the guy turns around, and he's wearing black glasses and carrying a white stick. How do you feel now? Suddenly the music changes, like, oh my God, from indignation, we've now gone to guilt, guilt, guilt. So Damien goes back in line, hangs his head. This guy taps his way out, having got the money, goes out, and Damien follows him out. He thinks, why not? Follows him out, opens the door, and as he follows him out, he sees this guy throw off the glasses and jump into a Lamborghini with a beautiful blonde and drive off. How does Damien feel now, right?
Outrageous.
This is a scene in which there are three contexts, okay? Which shows that the context of an action absolutely dictates your reaction to it.
Mm.
Okay, so the question is, in a scene, if I can come back to it, what is a scene? A scene, and this is like life, a scene effectively, to cut to the chase, is a choice.
Mm.
Every good scene has got a good choice in it. It makes the protagonist make a choice. What do we like to do in life? Avoid choices. You know, like, I don't want to. So what I would say, in order, if you've got a deep intent, and we can talk about how we do that again, that's something I'll deal with in this little mini course, but install an intent and then give yourself some great choices. Now, we love not to have choices, but that would be a very powerful and fun way of setting the year up.
Mm.
Because it's not about, I would suggest, elegance. How do we get from A to B with the least turbulence? That is not human. That's not humanity.
Mm.
That might be engineering and it might be finance, but it is not the human way, okay?
Mm.
What you would do is set a deep intent that you care about and is you, and then give yourself lots of great choices, because what does a choice do? It helps you look into your blind spot and ask yourself, do I really want that thing? Do I really want that thing? Do I really want that thing? And a little, you know, why would you do that? It sounds a bit kind of, was that indulgent? What is that? I tell you one thing, anybody that's sitting out there running a business or running a family or being a citizen, if any of you want to feel that you are more noticed, you're more compelling, you have more confidence, people listen to you more, I have to say, from my research, is that people that make good choices are incredibly attractive, or people who give themselves good choices to make. I don't mean that the outcome is good, because, you know, how do we know? But the skill of putting yourself in situations where you have to ask good questions and make choices will sharpen up your protagonistic skills. Does that make sense?
Mm, absolutely. Phenomenal. Well, we've been totally immersed and seeped in this conversation, and I haven't actually had a chance to ask any questions from listeners, but I do definitely want to ask this one from Chris, and it actually ties in very nicely when you were talking about deep intent and how it's actually profoundly generative. There's a real I guess, energy and force that moves through the hero, and actually ties in well with Chris's question. Chris is from South Africa, and Chris asks, how does one manage one's own procrastination?
Oh, great question. Well, it's a very good question, because there's an answer in the question, which is not how does one avoid or conquer, but how does one manage? He's answered his own question. Procrastination, which goes from Latin, means putting off things till tomorrow. I think the thing that's really interesting, if you shed some of the modern assumptions about heroes and you look back through history, through literature, through the Bible, through the myths, procrastination is a quality that the hero has and manages. You know, the heroes that we connect with are not people that, when the call to adventure, as it's called, comes, drop everything immediately and just head for the hills. True humans, when they're called to adventure or when they're facing choices or dilemmas, it's completely natural to procrastinate, to delay. Even in the Bible, you have Jesus saying, you know, let this cup pass from me. It's like, and that's not cowardice. That's got to do with a totally human feeling, understanding of the import of what comes. Especially if, and most of your listeners will be doing this, will probably have a quite high intent and probably have a quite, you know, powerful desire to move forward. If you have that, then your shadow is the procrastinator. And what I would do is embrace the procrastinator. Don't try and fight it, but don't dwell in it. Don't let it run you. So notice when you're procrastinating. Give yourself the benefit of the doubt and say, you know, there's a reason for this. But it is a choice, okay? And, you know, before the audience leave the room, make a choice. Because audiences will love to watch somebody procrastinate a bit, because they go, oh, that's like me. To think about it, if you see a film where somebody's just too eager, you will either cease to believe in them as a hero, cease to like them, or both. We like our heroes ordinary, actually, however extraordinary their costumes and their position in life. We like to see this reflection, this inward, the consideration, maybe even fear, whatever. You know, courage is not about not having fear, it's about managing that fear. So I think, you know, see the procrastination as something noble, human. It's a property of a hero, and we've all got it. And then don't let it run you.
And I guess there's a natural tension that builds as well that can actually really build up that propelling force as well, I guess.
I think that's right. There is another thing. It depends what kind of guy Chris is, or and Chris might be a woman. But there's anybody who's done any writing will know this feeling, which is, You kind of have to, a friend of mine, in fact, David McCready, who you've also had on your show, puts it nicely, said, you know, it's like surfing, although I don't think either of us actually surfed, but it's like surfing. You know, you have to spend the whole day to catch the one wave. And, you know, if procrastination's got to do with actually the time isn't quite right, or your mind isn't channeling the right stuff, then go with the procrastination. Breathe, relax. Wait for the moment and then catch the wave. Sometimes we're saying procrastinating, but it's because we've got a rather artificial sense of how long things take and what should happen in what order. And it's actually your mind forcing you to do something that you're it's reminding me that, well, I just reminded me, my darling daughter, Elsa, had decided that she was ready to go and do a 5-day stayover away from home for the first time in Italy, actually. And as the day got closer, she got clearly more concerned, and she was hesitating until the actual day itself, and she's only 9 at the time, or 8. And she took me aside and she says, Daddy, you know about, I know I've been saying I wanted to do this. She said, my brain says yes, but my body says no. And I thought, oh, gosh, hang on to that, girl. You know more than we do.
The story of my life.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Now, I'm just going to quickly, before we actually chat a bit more about your programs, David, just ask a personal question. And I guess you've been exposed to so many heroes and so many different movies. I was just wondering if you had a personal favourite hero.
Oh, wow.
That's probably a tough question.
No, I love that. It's a great question. You know, the first picture that came to my mind, and I love this film, and I shouldn't, but I do. It's a film called The Long Good Night, and it's a really Hollywoody thriller, but it is brilliant, and it's got Gina Davis as an assassin who's had amnesia and comes back and as a school teacher. That's the first picture. I mean, she's absolutely picture perfect, but a kind of cartoon hero. I do find difficulty answering that question, if I'm honest.
Mm.
I think I'm skirting it. And I love, there's so many. You love the comic heroes. You love the Spartacuses there's too many. I think partly because I now, if I'm really honest, I see them as an archetype. They kind of merge into a male and woman, comic and tragic archetype, which of course is you. I don't mean just you, Damien. I mean it's us, and it's. Mm. I wish I could have given a bit more of a stirring answer to that. There is a hero. There is a hero, of course. I had a great story about Mandela. I was in Africa earlier this year, and I was privileged to be with one of the Mandela scholars, who's a guy who would once a year spend some time with Madiba, as they call him. And what was great about this is, I hope they won't mind telling this story, I don't think he would. They spend a day together and with all the Mandela scholars, and on this day they went off, one day a year, and they went off to a lunatic asylum. I'm trying to think of a better way of saying that, but you know what I mean, a psychiatric institute. Mm. And they were checking in, and of course, Mandela didn't need to check in, and he wandered off as is his wont, and he went to talk to somebody, and he went up to a guy sitting there, and he introduced himself. Hello, I'm Nelson Mandela. And this guy looked up at him and said, yeah, and I'm Michael Jackson. and the guy, Mandela, said, no, I really am Nelson Mandela. And this guy kind of put his arm around him and said, listen, I was the same way as you the first day I got here. I think that's, I think that's, we love our hero. What's great about Mandela is not only did that happen, but he went back and told everybody that it happened.
Yeah.
So I think we need our heroes. We like our heroes, especially these days. We like them open and vulnerable. We like them accessible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't want them to be too remote, I think.
Yeah, and that deep humility. Yeah, amazing. Well, David, we've fit so many amazing anecdotes and stories and insights into 50 minutes. I can't believe how much content we've actually covered. It's just been such a rich experience, and I've grown tremendously and been on a hero's journey myself just over the past 50 minutes. But it's been incredibly engaging and thoroughly exciting all the way through, and I was just wondering for people listening at home who have no doubt not really been fully immersed in this process as I have, I guess they'll be very interested to know more about your work and how they can actually explore more of the incredible things that go inside your mind. How can they access more of it?
The cinema. Well, firstly, they should go into their mind, I think, and play around there. That's where the real fun is. But thank you for the nice link. What I would say is we have a website which is called pearlgroup.net in the UK, and there's a number of things there. There's business, but also personal programs. There's Realize, which people can find either through my site there or at realizers.com, which is this course that you not only attended, but they also have really helped shape and have helped me, inspire me to move on with it. There is this particular month. Let me say a little bit about that, because it's a new experiment, and I'd really invite people to, if they'd like to go deeper in this, how do they find their deep intent and how do they install it in the year. There's some stuff which I think is kind of I don't know if it's cutting edge, but I certainly haven't seen anybody else doing this. It's stuff that I've researched over time, and I'd love to share it. And the way that works is in a couple of weeks' time, before people you should meet, before the teleseminar, at 6:30 GMT, we'll be doing a video seminar which people can all interact with each other. It's for 20 people, and we're hoping that 20 people will join if peopleyoushouldmeet.comers want to do it. There's a discounted rate for that as well. I believe that's it's £100 sterling, if not, but £75 if you're a friend of Damien's. What that does, it sets off a month of kind of like a mini course of miracles, I think. And we'll get back together a month later, but during the course of the time, I'll also be sending you digital practices and prompts and games and things to try during the days that to explore about how you can, you know, put your intent into action. So that's something that's a real live offer up there that anyone can take if they want to.
Fantastic! I love the whole the idea of the prompt. I think even the most well honed individuals on the planet still need people by their sides prompting them into their greatest possibilities. So
especially the best honed. You know, as an improviser, and you know, I think I said this to you once before, but the thing you dread as an improviser is getting good at improvisation because you get stuck. Mm-hmm. So this is those prompts really about a bit, you know, upsetting the pattern a bit so that we can all learn.
Mm. Awesome. And I can also just wanted to touch on Realize as well, like from my own personal experience. Like I've done a whole spectrum of different personal development, and that certainly was probably one of the highlights of all the courses that I've done in my lifetime. And like I don't say that lightly, it's just a phenomenal journey and really unlike anything that I've ever done in my life. I guess using all the different aspects of the arts, there was presence of opera, the presence of improvised acting, the presence of still life photography. It was just such an amazing collection of experiences that was all organized and arranged in a way that really helped me to uncover more of who I am and what I'm here to do. So it was a phenomenal experience, and I highly recommend anyone interested in walking that kind of path to explore that fully as well.
Oh, that's great. That's been, you know, that's a dream of my life as well. Realize is so I'm touched and very happy that you really very touched and happy that you say that. I think especially for people like, you know, us, whatever that means, but I think we know what that means, and I'm talking about your listeners as well, is that these are times where we have to both realize in the sense of, you know, have ideas and insights, but more importantly, we're the people that have to make them real and make things real in the world. And I think the arts and creativity is at our fingertips, and you know, let's play, let's make things happen, but do it in you know, delightful, highly creative, artistic and enjoyable ways.
Absolutely. And I was just wondering another personal question, David, just on your own year ahead. What exciting projects are really drawing your attention, and what would you love to realise personally over 2010?
Well, I do practice this work myself, and I really do at the moment feel like I am a puppet on a string. There are things happening, and I'm writing things that I didn't know I knew. But I think for me, this is a year where we take to the streets. In the sense that it's a year of people power. It's a year where people are a bit disappointed in politics and, you know, everything that looked so firm and solid before. And I think they're also a bit overwhelmed by the, you know, environmental threat that appears to surround us. So I think it's a time where people play. And I think I'm a huge believer in, you know, in civil society and people playing. And I intend to be helping them. So I'm working on a stupidly bold idea. And Damien, I will be on the phone to you shortly to enroll you in it. But it's really taking some of what's happening with online gaming and the online world and transforming it and using it in the live world as well.
Mm, wow, that's amazing. And in terms of just bringing the call to a close, David, did you have any final words of inspiration for people as they embark upon their own hero's journey for 2010?
Yeah, two things. One is there's only three endings you can have. So plan your ending. You can have a comic ending, and that's the year where a comic ending is where the hero learns nothing. Okay, so you can. It's funny to look at, but not funny to live. So there's that. There's the tragic ending where you learn lessons but too late, and there's the heroic ending where you learn lesson and in time. And what that buys you is not a hammock in Saint-Tropez. It buys you another movie. It buys you a sequel. You get a chance to do another. And that's, I'm afraid, the way it is, and that's great. And the other thing I found it inspiring, was at the end of the year, you know how at the end of a movie the credits roll and people appreciate and thank the people who are involved? Do that for everyone who was in your movie, whether they knew it or not. Mm. Tell people that you appreciated the role, especially the people that pissed you off or you felt, you know, I thanked the banks for waking me up, you know, and I thanked, you know, various things that you might have thought of as bad things, but, you know, it's an act of mastery as well that you can, you know, thank the things that have happened, acknowledge them, learn from them, and then you'll be even better set up when we start going into 2011.
Mm. Absolutely. And that actually segues nicely into me just taking this moment to actually thank and acknowledge you, David, for all the incredible wisdom that you embody and share with the world. It's like thoroughly inspiring to me, and I'm sure people have had a phenomenal experience, and I just wanted to thank you on their behalf this evening.
Really my pleasure. I'd do it any time. it's such fun. I can't believe that was an hour. My gosh.
Amazing. And also, I guess, with any stage performance, it really isn't very much fun without an audience. So I just really wanted to take the time to thank and acknowledge everyone listening in at home from wherever you are tuning in around the world. I guess creating this space and this hour every single week to come together and share inspiring ideas and dream and play and experiment and just live freely, it's really an incredible gift. To give yourself and to others, and just having the opportunity to play with you on a weekly basis is real, something that stirs my heart and soul week to week. So I just wanted to thank you all for making this a possible reality in this phenomenal time we're living in.
It's like saying thank you for letting us, and this is how I feel, thank you for letting us be an extra in your movie.
Exactly. hopefully not a nemesis, but I'm open to that as well.
Okay.
Great. And for those of you who would love to listen to this call again, I certainly will be. It will be made available for free on the peopleyoushouldmeet.com website tomorrow. Now, one thing I do encourage everyone to do is actually to take that step forward. This call may be an amazing prompt to give to a friend, to give to a loved one, a co-worker, a nemesis in your life. So do take that step forward if you feel moved to, and share this material freely, because it's here to serve the world. Great. So I think that's the end of another call, and it's been an absolute pleasure, David, once again to have you on the program, and I look forward to our next call that we share sometime in the future.
So this is where you put your director's hat on and you say, that's a wrap.
No, I was actually taking it one step forward. I was planning another sequel, but...
Well done.
It's always a pleasure.
All right, take care.
Okay,
thanks for this. Bye.
Okay, bye.